Hello and welcome to Wooden Spoons on CKUW 95.9 FM. My name is John Dick, and I'm here with community nutritionist Mary Jane Eason to discuss topics of healthy living, environmental issues, what's going on in our community, as well as other interesting things in this one-hour show. On Wooden Spoons, we recognize that all things are related, and with learning awareness, we connect the dots that make up our world. Every Friday morning on Wooden Spoons, we speak with guests on today's relevant issues, share nutritious recipes, and explore important topics with perspectives not found in the mainstream media. Time right now is 8:01 a.m., and the temperature outside is minus 6 degrees. Good morning, Mary Jane.
Good morning, John. How are you this morning?
I am good. You?
Oh, pretty good. It's a pretty nippy morning this morning, and I think it's time to wear more wintry clothes.
Yeah,
I made that decision.
The snow hasn't come down yet, but it's definitely getting colder out.
Yeah, and we have to expect that, and no, every season has its good points and its not so good points.
Mm-hmm.
And so today, I just want to make an acknowledgement that we are located on Treaty 1 territory, the traditional land and waters of the Cree, Ojibwe, Ojibwe Cree, Dakota, and Dene people, as well as the birthplace of the Métis Nation and the heart of the Métis homeland. We also acknowledge the Shoal Lake Number 40 First Nation and its territory for our life-giving water. So just a little rundown of what we're going to be doing this morning. We're going to be having an interview with our guest, who I will introduce very shortly. For the first part of the program, or however long it takes, and then there will be some commentary afterwards that will be following that. Again, commentary on the Israeli regime of despair. This is something I'd like to share that we had shared before, though. And then another one about Gaza, an article by Jeffrey St. Clair. And then some commentary on the rights of nature, and so on and so forth. So this morning, I am very pleased to introduce our guest, Hossein Osama Shoker, who I met at a rally sponsored by Peace Alliance Winnipeg. And this was in front of the CBC radio station on Saturday, November the 16th at noon. I managed to skip out that day from the school because we were preparing for a fundraiser dinner. Anyway, that's when I met Hossein. He describes himself as an immigrant son of an immigrant father who left Lebanon in 1993 after the Lebanese Civil War ended. Hossein was born in Kuwait and left his home to go to Canada in 2023. He is the Vice President, Event Coordinator of Students for Justice in Palestine, acronym is SJP, as well as the Vice President and co-founder of an organization called Diversity for Palestine. And it's written diversity and the number four, Palestine. It's a neat way of putting it. So today we'll be talking to Hossein about his life experiences and that of his family, as well as the work he's doing with students and the organization Diversity for Palestinians. We will be talking to Hossein about issues concerning the Western media and their coverage of the Palestinian situation, and we will also learn about the experiences of the Palestinians in the Middle East and in Canada and elsewhere. Welcome to Wooden Spoons, Hossein.
Hello, hello. How are you, Mary? How are you, John?
Well, we survived.
Well, we survived, at least.
Yeah.
Okay, so, surviving isn't living, my dear friends. Surviving isn't living. We, as humans, we deserve to live. I'd love to acknowledge and thank you guys for this interview. It is really a platform that us as a community has been stripped of for so long. So I deeply thank you for this opportunity, and hopefully our dear listeners from home, from around Winnipeg or around the world, enjoy today's interview and find it full of information.
Well, we're glad that you have joined us, Hussein. So
thank you.
Perhaps we could begin with you giving us some information about the circumstances that led you to leave Kuwait and then come to Canada. And what was it like living in Kuwait? And I guess at the time you were living there, there was also a war going on. That's around the time when the United States attacked Iraq. Mm-hmm. So you want to give us some
experiences? First of all, so to answer the first question, what are the circumstances? It has always been a dream to come to Canada. Ever since I was young, since I was 10 years old, my father always said that our ultimate dream is to come to Canada. Canada is a place where essentially the voice of the voiceless could speak. Everyone gets a right. Everyone is treated equally. So it has been a dream for so long, to say the least. And I think I've made on my dad's wishes. I acted on my dad's wishes, and here I am now. Answering your second question, so I was born in 2005, which is 2 years after the initial invasion of Iraq. And to be honest, I was too young to remember anything. Now, yeah, I do remember of execution of Saddam Hussein back in 2006, which happened in Kuwait. Now I'm a big history fanatic, especially World War II, Cold War, American invasions, Bosnian War, you name it. But something that directly affected us is the 2006 July War between Zionist occupation and Lebanon, where me and my family were actually going to Lebanon via car. So we didn't use a plane. We just went via car from Kuwait to Lebanon. And then during our way, the war happened in Lebanon, which caused us to take refuge in Syria. These are some stories that my parents told me, because obviously I was less than a year old. So it is pretty interesting, the stories that come up from people that you meet out of nowhere, just like how me and Mary met at the protest, and now I'm here sharing my stories. Mm-hmm. So I don't remember a lot from the Iraqi invasion of the U.S. invasion of Kuwait. However, I remember my parents telling me about the 2006 War of Lebanon, and how after the war ended, my uncle, who has been martyred recently, took me and took my grandparents and my parents, because as you said earlier, I lived in Kuwait most of my life. My extended family, uncles, aunts, grandfathers, you name it, were all in Lebanon. So I'm living in two different identities, an identity where I'm in Kuwait, and then another identity when I go back to Lebanon, which happened every year.
That's amazing.
So, in a nutshell, that's my experience.
You mentioned your uncle was martyred. You said martyred?
Yes, martyred. Actually, when we met at the protest, 2 days earlier, I heard news that my uncle had been martyred by the Zionist occupation, of course. So, yeah, it's been quite difficult with my family, especially for my mother in specific, as a couple of days before that, she heard of her brother's martyrdom. And then days later, she hears of her son, me, getting stabbed in the leg. So it's been difficult on my family, to say the least.
Yes. Where are your parents living now today?
They're living in Kuwait.
Okay. And so you had never been in Iraq, and I guess you were born in Kuwait, but you don't remember a whole lot because you were very small, and your parents are still living in, they're still living in Kuwait today?
Yes, they're still living in Kuwait. Iraq, I never went to Iraq, but it is definitely something that I'm very interested in. It is definitely a place that I'm very interested and looking forward to go to in the near future, like within the next 2 years. Just because for us, at least Shiite Muslims, it carries one of the most holy places, which is called Karbala. It is where in 680 AD Imam Hussein was martyred, and for Shiite Muslims and many Muslims, he is also considered the Imam of Sacrifice, where he has a very beautiful saying where he says, "If the religion of Muhammad is not going to prevail unless I am killed, oh swords, come and take me." So the idea of Imam Hussein really plays a vital role in the idea of the resistance for us, that fighting for the right path, we will do whatever it is. We will never go back on our stance. We will go and fight for the right path against any oppressor, even if it means that we should be killed. We do not fear death. So
Excellent.
this ideology really creates these big heroes on the battlefield.
Yes, that comes out very clearly, that ideology, that determination to protect. And yes, would you also comment on the Palestinian situation in Gaza? And of course, the experience of the Palestinians after the Second World War ended in 1945, there was an area carved out that was occupied by Palestinians. It was carved out to create a Jewish state. And I think that was as a result, most, I mean, that was the result of Holocaust, which the Jews suffered through under the Third Reich of Hitler. And perhaps a lot of guilt on the Western from the Western countries about this, and so they took out some land from the Palestinians and made the Jewish state. So, do you want to comment on all that?
So, I'm gonna divide your questions into two. So, first of all, the involvement of the Third Reich and the experiences of the Jews coming into Palestine and the experience of Palestine itself. So, first of all, did you know that the Third Reich back in 1933, led by General Adolf Eichmann, they had three places where they wanted to essentially kick the Jews out to? So they were, Palestine was one of them, Ghana, and Argentina. This is something that I went through and came across during a research which I did about the rise of Zionism and how Zionism came to be the state of Israel. So it wasn't just mainly Palestine that they wanted to kick Jews out towards. There was a vast array of lands that eventually they chose on Palestine after the fall of the Third Reich. That's where the Americans and the West essentially took the Jews to. Now, answering your second question about the experiences of the Jews and then the experiences of the Palestinians. First of all, we gotta agree that a man's freedom should not come at the cost of another man's occupation. Why can't we live in coexistence? Why do we need to create a state like an ethno-state? Why? Wasn't the land originally Palestine, as we said before? Why can't the Jews that went through hell essentially through the Holocaust, and we condemn the Holocaust, why can't they live under Palestinian ruling, which is something that did happen up till 1948, where the Zionist identity came in and invaded villages, which came to be the Nakba. So we created a new Holocaust, but to Palestinians. However, since Palestinians do not have blue eyes and blonde hair, we do not call it Holocaust, and we dehumanize them.
The situation of the Palestinians, is their experience has been described as the Nakba. That is...
Or in other words, so that we connect with more of a Western audience, it is a Holocaust as well to us. This is the Palestinian version of the Holocaust.
Right. So before the Jewish state had been established, I understand that the situation, the relationship between Jews and Palestinians were very cordial.
So I came across as well in a documentary a couple of months early, where it explained how things were before the Nakba, or before the Palestinian Holocaust. And there were many testimonies, countless testimonies from Palestinian villagers and Palestinian people, where they explicitly say that them and the Jews were neighbors. They were like you and me. They exchanged food. They lived together. They were their neighbors. So the idea of neighbor is something that is very, very big. Neighbor is someone that you trust, that if someone comes and tries to attack you, your neighbor is going to have your back. And vice versa. So there was coexistence before the Nakba. However, when the Zionist entity came into play, that's where it turned everything on its head. But the Palestinian and the Jews lived together peacefully.
That's a very important point to emphasize. You're listening to Wooden Spoons 95.9 FM, and we're talking to Hussein, Osama Hussein, and Osama Shoker, I should say, and my name is Mary Jane Eason, and my co-host is John Dick. Do you have a question, John?
I guess not really a question, but like some people have compared the like Israel-Palestine situation to colonization of like the indigenous people in Canada. Would you have any thoughts about that?
Of course. It is the same cause. It's the same play of colonialism all over again. A group of people who have been lied to and told this is a place of no, this is a land with no people, and the people for a people with no land. This is the motto of the Zionist entity. And they came in and then they killed and expelled Palestinians out of their land. Why, we ask again, why couldn't you have lived peacefully with the Palestinians? Why did you need to rely on violence? It is the same thing that the European immigrants did to the indigenous people of Canada. This is the same thing that the European immigrants did to the indigenous people of the United States. This is what the colonizers did. Lebanon has been colonized until our independence in 1947 by the French. So the Middle East as a whole went through a lot of colonialism. So it is the same story. We have seen it multiple times happening over and over and over and over and over again. However, right now, this is the most documented genocide that no one is calling it the way it is. It is a genocide where they're ethnically cleansing a group of people. This is the description of genocide. Ethnically cleansing a group of people. And they themselves, the Zionist entity, they themselves acknowledge that they're committing a genocide. And they said, yes, their final plan was to kick Palestinians out. Because if it is about the hostages, as they claim it to be, why are they then attacking Lebanon? Why do they have plans of invading Lebanon and then taking parts of Syria, then taking parts of Egypt, taking all of Kuwait, taking parts of Saudi Arabia, Iraq? Why? As a plan for the greater Israel. So this is not about... So in my opinion, and it is the only true opinion that you could ever see, is that Zionism, if it's doing anything, it is dehumanizing the Jews. It is merging its identity with Jews, which is bringing Jews out to be in a horrible place or in a horrible look, that they are people that commit genocide. So Zionism itself is anti-Semitic because it paints Jews as barbaric humans who are killing everyone.
Yeah, and the term Zionism is really goes back maybe thousands of years to a certain concept of, I understand that since King David, where they were given entitlement to have these lands given to them, something to that nature. So this is a very kind of fundamentalist ideology that they're trying to impose on all Jewish people.
Mm-hmm.
And I
find it very unfair. Where's the democracy in all of that? So if, and this is something that has been happening with our local community as well. Any Jew that does not associate themselves with Zionists, they would call him a self-hating Jew, which is anti-Semitic itself. So this is something that we really need to put an eye out on. This is something that the press should put an eye on, that anti-Semitism is occurring here by people that claim to be Jews who are actually Zionists. And Zionists could be from different faiths. You could have... And you do not need to be... you do not need to be an Israeli to be a Zionist. We have many Zionist Arabs. We have many Zionist Christians. We have many Zionist people from different faiths. So it is an ideology that has been merged so well, and I will give credit where it's due, that in their plan, they did a very good job in merging both identities together, and this is something that we have to work on, to separate the Jewish identity and the Zionist identity.
And now I know that several ministers, Jewish prime ministers, each of them have been taking a little bit more and more of what is Palestinian lands, but under Netanyahu, the government has, under his rule, the government has accelerated to take over all the Palestinian lands. Like, it's become very clear they want all that territory. They want to kick out all the Palestinians. And why is this happening? And who is supporting this government to allowing them to do that?
Because they're bloodthirsty maniacs, to say the least. I don't know what you want me to say. I mean, this is inhumane. I don't know how to explain it in human terms, because I don't think this is a humane whatsoever when I go and have a conversation with a Zionist. It's as if I'm speaking to a body without a soul. That's how I've been dealing with them, essentially. Because there's no point playing on their humanitarian side. Because when it comes to Palestinians and Arabs, they don't see us as humans. So there is no point of it. Although we try, we have been trying for so long to bring them to the right side of history, they just don't want to. And as to who is supporting them, so of course the U.S. and its allies. As of recently, the U.N. Security Council, they did a vote for a ceasefire. The U.S., again, unsurprisingly, vetoed the ceasefire resolution, which isn't new by the U.S. They have always been the biggest terror of the world. So it is heart-aching for everyone who deals with things on a pacifist side or on a humanitarian side. To that, I have to say, "Ifrahu qalilan wa sabtabkuna kathiran." The translation to English is, "Enjoy a little bit, and you're going to cry a lot."
Do you want to comment on the organization called Hamas and the role Hamas plays? I understand it's not just a military role, but it's also is a government too.
Mary, I'm not here to comment on any organizations. I am in full support of a resistance, any type of resistance against the Zionist entity. I'm in full support of any resistance against the Zionist entity, regardless.
Okay.
Because Zionism is death. We are the ones who live.
Mm-hmm. And that puts it in a different perspective, you know, the way you're describing it. I've been reading, like, Hamas is a govern. They also govern. They rule the people, like they're their government in certain ways. And in other ways, there's sort of a military branch where they are trying to defend their territory. That sort of thing. Like they're just like civil government, and then another aspect, of course, is where they're taking military action to defend the rights of the Palestinians and their lands from being taken away. Do you know? Could you comment on who is behind the scenes, the sources of the devastation of Palestinian lands, and who is profiting from this devastation?
Of course, who is behind the scene? The great devil, the United States and its allies. In addition, Germany, which isn't a new of Germany to be on the wrong side of history, did. Their weapon profiteering has been exponential ever since the genocide started, and I've seen countless reports of their guns industry just skyrocketing. So who is the biggest winner in all of this? It is the weapons industries for certain. It's people who sell weapons and buy weapons. Because for those industries to work, they need wars, they need genocide. So I think their plans are going into motion, especially since the budget of Israel and the donations that it's getting from the U.S. and its allies is exponential. Rather than the U.S., Canada, and the rest of the allies help their own citizens who need that money in a very desperate time, let us send that money to Israel. Let them kill those Palestinians, because, you know, Palestinians are not humans. Let them kill those Lebanese. Lebanese are not human. So, yeah, we would rather starve our own people rather than then make Daddy Israel cry. So yeah, that's how it is, and this is the right opinion around it.
And in all this, you mentioned the media, and where is the media in this situation? And, you know, Canada's noted to be a free country. And when it comes to the Palestinian situation, do you want to comment about how the media deals with it? And also what immigration policies the Canadian government follows concerning Palestinian refugees?
So to answer your question very blatantly, where is the media in all of this? They have to listen to their big daddy, Israel, of course, because Israel, most media organizations are owned by Israeli businessmen. So it isn't surprising to see that there is a bias or a conflict of interest in things that are playing out and the things that the media is showing. The correct media that is coming out of Gaza, that is showcasing the genocide that is happening, the Israeli government is silencing them and censoring them. So Western media as a whole, horrible. They have their own agendas to follow. I wouldn't say Middle Eastern agendas are the best either. I mean, we have a lot of Middle Eastern Zionist agendas. It is quite difficult to find the correct journalists to follow. Now, there are multiple journalists, individual journalists, that have been doing a very good job dealing with the Palestinian cause and showcasing the Palestinian cause, and now the Lebanese cause. From the Lebanese side, of course, how are you, baby? Ali Murtada is one of the most notable names that comes to my mind from the Lebanese journalism and Palestinian journalism. Of course, Mu'taz Azaizi did a lot of work for the Palestinian cause, although I do not agree with many things that he has done. We have Wissan and Plastina, if I'm not wrong. There were a lot of journalists that really gave their blood, sweat, and tears to the Palestinian cause, and we appreciate their efforts. They are the real heroes at the end with their lenses, because they were able to show us the level of viciousness that the Zionist occupation is committing.
So we could say, even about Canada, that our Canadian government is really is supporting the genocide. Would you say that?
Unfortunately. And to answer your second question, what are the immigration policies that they need to do? Just let's help these innocent children that lost their parents. Those children that are facing PTSD. Those children that are amputees. Let's help them. Let's cut them some slack. The entire world is against them. Canada as an idea, we're the actual land of second choices, or the land of opportunity. We need to help these people. This is the idea of Canada as a whole, helping people. That's what we are. That's what we always have done.
Right. And they're speaking about journalists too. There are a lot of journalists that have been killed, and I think you may know pretty much the exact number of the journalists that have been killed in this war, and that killing a journalist is considered a war crime. Mm-hmm. And so the journalists are the eyes and ears of what is going on, and they inform people what is going on. So do you want to comment on how many journalists are killed, and what is the effect of losing journalists in this situation? What is the effect on society?
All right. First of all, I wanted to comment on something. I noticed that we're constantly using the term war. It is not a war. A war is where two identities or entities of equal power are fighting it out. But right now, it is just one genocidal maniac state that is completely bombing another state. And then you have a small group of resistance that is trying to fight this occupation out.
Okay.
So it is a genocide, thoroughly and blatantly. It is a genocide. Secondly, around the numbers that of journalists that have been martyred is approximated around 193 journalists. This number is probably more. I'm bringing this statistic from last Saturday. So I would love to believe, or it saddens me to believe, that this number has increased. In addition, what does it mean to society and to humanity? It shows us that we're done for. We are done for if we're able to stay quiet on war crimes happening just because a specific group or a specific entity has so much power. Then where is the democracy in it all? We have lied to ourselves and thought that democracy will save us. It didn't. If anything, it is supporting a genocidal state. Now, democracy as an idea is beautiful. However, how it's being implemented is horrible. It's horrendous. It is an excuse to kill a group of people. And this is what the genocidal state is saying. They're constantly saying that, oh, we're the only democracy in the Middle East. Hey, maybe because the people of the Middle East do not want democracy. Simple as that. Now, there are areas where there is democracy. Lebanon, for an example, we have a democracy. We do not need your democracy. So, to say it blatantly, the world has failed us. Everyone has failed us. And they're just watching us being killed, and they're laughing about it.
Sir, that's a profound statement. And also, there are many Jews that do not buy into the rhetoric against Palestinians. And, you know, there's this group called Independent Jewish Voices.
And my brothers.
And Harold Schuster.
My brother.
Yeah, and he spoke at the rally, and I was it was beautiful because he was received as a brother, and that is such a sign of a wonderful thing to see. And so the Independent Jewish Voices have been vocal on the subject, and they're educated people in many ways. I know Harold has been doing that. He's been he had been intercepted by the his issues with he had a problem, some health problems, and he had to not do very much, but he's recuperating now. And I was very touched by the fact that there was such a warmth between Harold Schuster, a Jew, and the Palestinians there at the rally. That was such a good thing to see.
Well, I'm glad that you see that beauty again, as we said previously. And this is what I was trying to say earlier when I said whenever Jews are fighting Zionism, they would call themselves hating Jews. And I know Harold for a fact has came across that and has faced a lot of that by the Jewish Federation. I know for a fact he went through that. And as I said earlier, this action itself is anti-Semitic. Independent Jewish Voice as a whole has been helping us a lot. I've worked with them a lot in the past more than a year. I've known Harold for a long time now as well. They have been very supportive of many events that we have been doing. They have been coming out to rallies. All in all, this is a very, very important thing that we have to focus on, is to establish these connections with our Jewish brothers and sisters, like Harold, Independent Jewish Voices, so on and so forth.
Yeah, I met Candace, I think, Bodnarik there, the first person I met when I came on Saturday, and she's involved with Peace Alliance Winnipeg, and also involved with the boycotting of Jewish wines in the stores, and she was doing that, running that campaign, and that was
you mean Zion, like Israeli wines? I think you said something excellent.
No,
said
the Jewish wines that were, I guess, coming from Israel.
Israel,
Israeli.
We shouldn't say Jewish wine. We should say Zionist wine or
Zionist.
Israeli wine.
Okay. Yes. Yeah.
I had to correct you there because I'm not about to.
Yeah. Okay. That's yeah. We have to be very precise here. Maybe just one last question. maybe if you just a few last questions is, would you tell us about the group Students for Justice in Palestine, as well as the group you founded, Diversity for Palestine?
Of course, that would be a pleasure for me. So I got into office to Students for Justice in Palestine last August as an event coordinator. And the Students for Justice in Palestine has been created in 2021. So they're relatively a new group that has been facing hell at the UFM, a very Zionist entity. However, they have been relentless in their fight for Palestinian advocacy. And we saw that very clearly with the Palestinian encampment at the UFM, which I was a part of. Working in that environment is difficult, to say the least, where you have everyone trying to take turns on you, essentially trying to attack you in any way, shape, or form. It is very stressful. You're very, very censored. Like, we do, as much as they want to say that there is freedom of speech, no, there isn't. Let's not lie to each other. However, this did not stop the Students for Justice in Palestine to do a lot of amazing work, raising a lot of money for Palestine. And I will take this chance to invite both Mary and John and our dear listeners to the Palestine Gala on the 30th of November that SJP is going to be hosting in the Ukrainian Labor Temple. So we're going to be showcasing the Palestinian culture. We're going to have songs, traditional dances. I'm going to have a band playing. Their name is Opet. So they're a rock band that started with the Palestinian cause. They're amazing people. We're going to have a fashion show of Palestinian dresses. It's going to be a very, very big event. I'm trying for it to be the best event that has ever been done for the Palestinian cause in Winnipeg.
Would you just give the date and time? Would you give the date and time again?
Sure. It's going to be at the Ukrainian Labor Temple. Mm-hmm. It's going to be at 6 p.m. 30th of November. To purchase tickets, go to SJPUFM on Instagram. That's SJPUFM on Instagram. You have our links in the bios. You could purchase tickets from there.
And it's November 22nd, did you say?
30th,
sorry. Okay.
Yes.
Thank you for that.
And to answer the second part of your question, co-founding Diversity for Palestine. So Diversity for Palestine came to be months into the Palestinian genocide, more specifically December, where me and the co-founder, now president, Nozomi Collier, thought to ourselves that, hey, there are a lot of people who, yes, they're trying to support the Palestinian cause, but they don't associate with the groups that are out there. So Canadian Palestinian Association, a lot of people who are supporting the Palestinian cause aren't Palestinian themselves. Queers for Palestine, some people aren't queer themselves. Healthcare workers, laborers, so on and so forth. So we wanted to create an umbrella term for everything where everyone is welcomed regardless. And this is the idea of Diversity for Palestine. Now, we have been on the quiet side of as of recently. However, there is an ongoing attempt on reviving the group, which I will take this opportunity again to promote another event tomorrow, the 23rd. We're going to be having an event at the U of M. It is a collaborative event between SJP and Diversity for Palestine. It's going to be called the Circle of Voices. I would love to invite both Mary and John again and our dear speakers to the event. It's going to be happening at 7 p.m. So we hope to see you guys there. If you want to RSVP, you could find the information on SJPUFM or Diversity for Palestine on Instagram.
Thank you so much, Hussein, for joining us this morning. It has been great talking to you. We have to move on. It's just station ID, CKUW 95.9 FM. My name is Mary Jane Eason. We've been talking to Hussein Osama Shoker about this situation in Palestine and the issues there. And
yeah. There is a song request, but the song is in Arabic, so I can't tell you the title, but I'll play it right now.
I want to thank you, Hussein, for joining us this morning.
He's off right now.
Oh, did you cut him off?
No, like he left the Google Meet.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll send him a thank you. That was great talking to Hussein. And I just have a few more commentary to make and a recipe to share. I'm just going to go quickly over this. This is something that has been sent in July, but it's relevant today. It's called U.S.-Israeli Regime of Despair. when the media serves as an ideological state apparatus to genocide. This was written by Gerald Sussman. Since attaining statehood, Israel has been a de facto protectorate of the Zionist wing of American ruling elites. From 1946 to 2023, Israel has by far the largest recipient, was by far the largest recipient U.S. aid, $300 billion, inflation adjusted, with virtually all of its military assistance spent in the U.S., serving the buildup of the military-industrial complex and financed by what is now in total $1 trillion in government annual military outlays. This was a quote, Harris, 2024. This form of assistance and massive subsidy to Israel is part of an international money laundering scheme by which taxpayers are built of huge money transfers to private corporations in the military industrial complex. And also another commentary by Jeffrey St. Clair. It's The Scourging of Gaza, Diary of a Genocidal War. The International Court of Justice has made definitive what has been obvious for decades. It's about apartheid. He adds the word stupid at the end of it. In a sweeping ruling announced on Friday at the Hague, the court ruled that Israel's occupation of the Palestinian territories violates international law and should be ended. Determined that the occupation amounts to an annexation of Palestinian lands and that all Israel settlements should be evacuated and the land returned to Palestinians. It said that all Palestinians who have been forced into exile should be granted the right to return and the Israeli must pay them reparations for its destructive actions. The court described Israelis' treatment of Palestinians in the occupied territories as a form of racial segregation and apartheid and called for the dismantling of the apartheid wall, checkpoints, and other barriers to travel. So these are some commentaries that certainly apply to what's happening today. And I think we didn't really get to talk with Hussein about the Western media, and we just ran out of time. Maybe we will get to that at another date. Also, the rights of nature. There's also a growing movement of the rights of nature, and that it's a movement grounded in principles of justice. And so this this quote, it says that. You know, you can't rob someone's house and get away with it. So why should you be able to rob the forest of its resources? If crimes like murder, arson, and trespassing come with criminal sentences, what's the difference when those same crimes are committed by companies against animals, trees, or rivers? Now, this comes from the site Organic Consumer Association. Chile is in the process of drafting a new constitution that emphasizes the rights of nature, saying human survival depends on it. Nearby Panama is a step ahead, having signed legislation at the start of this year that gives nature the right to exist, persist, and regenerate its life cycles. And in February, a top court in India ruled that Mother Nature, quote, had the same rights as a person under law. Around the world, at least 17 countries have introduced some form of nature rights law, from the U.S. to New Zealand. And this comes from the Organic Consumer Association. It's a site. It's an American organization. So that's something to consider, the rights of nature. And we will soon be seeing... We hopefully will see laws that will curtail the damage that is being done by mining companies and so on against contaminating the land. And Eva Pip, I'm just going to mention something that she... has said in her communication with me. She said there is the issue of mining, which has devastated many northern and eastern lakes in Manitoba. And much of the contamination cannot be cleaned up and has impacted a number of First Nations and Métis communities severely. We need to issue a warning in light of the current government policy to promote critical minerals. We need to have the regulations and mechanisms for oversight in place first. And we need to pay attention to how many of our mines get sold off to foreign interests, especially China. There's a big one owned by Hong Kong in eastern Manitoba, not far from where Eva Pip lives. So she knows what she's talking about. And she said their production and profit are shipped offshore. We get left with the environmental mess. And I know of a case in Flin Flon where my husband used to work years ago. In Flin Flon, there were mining companies, and they have polluted all the beautiful waters in Flin Flon, all the waters. They do not clean up their mess. So this is, we need to be aware. The public has to be more active in defending nature, defending life, and of course, defending the rights of all people in their struggles. So I think we're getting close to the end of our program, and I want to, if I have the moment, to end with a recipe. And this is a simple recipe for crispy fritters, zucchini walnut fritters, easy to make. So one medium zucchini, finely shredded. You leave the peels on, of course. One small potato, peeled and finely shredded. And a cup of minced green onion, a 3/4 cup of finely ground walnuts, 2 tablespoons of chopped fresh parsley, 1/2 teaspoon of baking powder, 1/2 teaspoon of salt, 1/4 teaspoon of finely ground pepper, and 1/2 cup of all-purpose flour, plus more if needed. Olive oil for frying. So what you do, you preheat the oven to 250 degrees, it's not hot. In a large bowl, combine the zucchini, potato, green onion, walnuts, parsley, baking powder, salt, and pepper, and then you stir in the flour, adding more if needed, to make a thick batter. And on a large skillet, heat a thin layer of oil over medium heat and scoop a large tablespoon of the batter in the hot oil. Add as many fritters as you can without crowding. Flatten the fritters with a spatula and fry until golden brown on both sides, 6 to 8 minutes total. Remove the fritters to a heat-proof platter and keep warm in the oven, which is at 250 degrees, while you cook the rest, and you serve immediately. And this comes from the cookbook called 1,000 Vegan Recipes by Robin Roberts. So that is the, I just want to say this, we have now come to the end of our program on Wooden Spoons. Thank you for listening to our radio program. I'd like to thank our guest, Hussein Osama, and thank you, John, for co-hosting.
Yeah, for sure. You've been listening to Wooden Spoons on CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg. For our podcast, please go to ckuw.ca, type Wooden Spoons into the search bar, and the show will be up in just a few hours. Till next time, this is John Dick and Mary Jane Eason saying bye for now, and thanks for listening.